evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, October 3rd, 2014. Opposition party representatives reject demands by South Sudan's information minister to move peace talks from Ethiopia to Kenya.
If you derail the peace process, it means more people will continue dying, more people will continue to be displaced, hunger will continue to threaten our people, our properties will continue to be destroyed, and this is why we must fight hard to see that nothing happens in this relation.
And reports of South Sudan's currency being devalued by 50% is a false alarm.
We have decided that we are going to close down all the black markets. We will not see any dollars being sold on the streets. We will only support dollars to be obtained from forexes and from the commercial banks.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's opposition representatives are criticizing the government for calling for the disbandment of the peace talks in Ethiopia and replacing the chief mediator. The government is demanding the talks be moved to Kenya and headed by General Lazarus Simbeo. Philip Thonaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Opposition politicians say moving the talks to Kenya will delay the peace process and prolong the suffering of displaced South Sudanese. A group of 11 political parties called a news conference today to condemn remarks attributed to Government Information Minister Michael Makuei. Lem Akola Jawin, head of South Sudan's main opposition party, the SPLM-DC, says Makuei's comments are harmful to the peace process.
It is a detraction from what should be the center of concern. Our concern should be to arrive at a peaceful settlement as soon as possible. We don't believe the venue is the problem. We don't believe the mediators are the problem. We believe the problem is that the two warring parties do not have the political will to make the necessary compromises to arrive at a peaceful settlement.
Akol says chief mediator Siyom Mosfin has studiously guided the talks from the beginning. In a BBC interview earlier this week, Makuei accused the troika countries, the United States, Britain, and Norway, of planning a regime change agenda in South Sudan. Akol says such accusations will only prolong the suffering.
If you derail the peace process, it means more people will continue dying, more people will continue to be displaced, hunger will continue to threaten our people, our properties will continue to be destroyed, and this is why we must fight hard to see that nothing happens in this relation.
Akol was barred from leaving Juba last month to participate in the sixth round of peace talks. The government accused him of harboring presidential ambitions and aspiring to lead the proposed transitional government under discussion in Bahadur City, about 500 kilometers north of Addis Ababa. Akol says he had the right to try to attain power through peaceful means.
Anybody is in the South Sudanese is entitled to rule his country by democratic means and by agreement. If people agree that I should be part of the government, why not? What is wrong with it?
Talks between negotiators for the government and rebels led by former Vice President Riek Machar have dragged on for 9 months but have produced no tangible results. Both sides agreed to form a transitional government by mid-October. More than 10,000 people have been killed and nearly 2 million others have been displaced from their homes since fighting broke out in Juba last December. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
The government in Juba says it plans to ban black market trading in foreign currency. Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro announced the move amid concerns about the strength of South Sudanese pounds in relation to the US dollar. Lomuro made the announcement after a Council of Ministers meeting today. He says the government is concerned that the parallel currency markets are hurting the South Sudanese pounds, and as a result,
we have decided that we are going to close down all the black markets. We will not see any dollars being sold on the streets. We'll only support dollars to be obtained from forexes and from the commercial banks. And those engaged in black marketeering should listen to this carefully, that those who will be found to have engaged themselves in black marketeering will be brought to books.
Lomuro says the cabinet also expressed concern about the way the central bank is managing the currency flow in the country.
We register some concerns as to why we can see dollars in the black market on the streets and not in the commercial banks, not in the hands of the traders or citizens who want to go for simple treatment or private matters.
The official exchange rate for the Sudanese pounds is 3.16 to one US dollar, but on the black market it trades for 4.8 pounds to a dollar. Traders and ordinary citizens often complain that the high exchange rate for dollars makes the cost of importing goods very expensive. Imports to South Sudan are paid for in dollars. In the middle of last year, the central bank announced it had devalued the South Sudan currency in a bid to make the official and black market exchange rates the same. But the National Assembly forced the central bank governor, Cornelio Corriom, to rescind the move, saying it would lead to a rapid rise in commodity prices and hurt citizens. Lomro says the central government will consult parliamentarians before taking a similar decision in future. That report was written and prepared by Charlton Doki in Juba. A Ugandan professor of humanitarian law says the decision by his country to send troops to South Sudan was purely for economic reasons. Philip Kasaija says the Ugandan economy depends on thousands of Ugandans who work abroad, including those who work in South Sudan. Kasaija says his government's intervention in the December political crisis in Juba was to secure Uganda's economic lifeline in South Sudan. He says high unemployment in his country has forced thousands of Ugandans to seek jobs across the border.
What they should have done is to explain this intervention in the context of the economics of it. And I've argued that when you look at the numbers coming from the Bank of Uganda, Uganda has a very strong economic interest in South Sudan. And I think the Ugandan population would have understood it better had the government explained it in economic terms rather than these legal gymnastics which actually don't add up.
If you look at the population of Ugandans who are working in South Sudan, would you say they are putting a lot of foreign currency into Uganda's economy?
When you look at the numbers which come from Bank of Uganda, which have been given from Bank of Uganda, Uganda, before the war, earned something to the tune of in excess of $200 million per month from both informal and formal sectors in South Sudan. So that in itself is a very significant amount when you look at the budget of Uganda and also the entire GDP for a year. So that's really all I'm saying.
What is the reaction of ordinary Ugandans regarding the deployment of UPDF in South Sudan?
The Ugandan population, like other interventions, whether it was in Congo previously in 1998 or the intervention that you have undertaken under AMISOM in Somalia in 2007, even this one, the population has not really been keen on that intervention or in terms of wanting to know more. Other than the fact that you have the parliament at some point, I remember, was making some noises about the deployment and taking to task the government to explain the deployment and how far we have gone in crafting, or the government has gone in crafting an exit strategy. But other than that, there's information which is lacking for population to make informed debate.
How would you describe the dynamics of Uganda's economy without any foreign currency coming out from South Sudan? How would the economic of Uganda look like?
I think it will look bleak in the sense that the numbers just speak for themselves from Bank of Uganda. There's more than $200 million per month is a lot, is a significant amount of money in the context of Ugandan economy. But all in all, what I'm arguing is that yes, indeed, we have undertaken that intervention. We are funding it. There's nobody who is helping us to fund it, possibly other than the government of South Sudan to chip in terms of financing the our troops there, the fuel, etc. But other than that, in the context of the economy has not really suffered because of the intervention, at least from what we are told.
Just to put things into perspective, you're telling me that if Uganda's involvement in South Sudan is stopped all of a sudden, it will impact on the economy of Uganda.
Because of the reason for that would be that if there was outbreak of fighting, open fighting in South Sudan, suddenly then we see more refugees entering into Uganda, we'll see the suffering of the social services in Uganda because of the refugees, more internal displacement in town in South Sudan. So all that suddenly will have an impact on the economy in Uganda. This is what I'm saying.
What is the mainstay of Uganda's economy? I mean, what is the cash crop of Uganda?
The mainstay doing agriculture, certainly 80% of the population is engaged in agriculture. But increasingly, of course, we are seeing there is the problem of youth unemployment. And nobody has really come out clearly to tell us the numbers in terms of youth unemployment. But if I were to estimate, what's about 80% of the youth in this country are unemployed?
Professor Philip Kasaija teaches humanitarian law at Makerere University in Kampala. He was speaking to me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, earlier today.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility, compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new film about the lost voice and their plight in Sudan has just opened in the United States. That story is coming up next.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how important are workers' unions in your economy?
They are very important because there are some people who don't know their rights. So to someone who doesn't know his or her right, the umbrella is there. They can involve those umbrellas to help them understand or know their rights when they are violated.
Workers' union, they're not very important for me. I mean, an employee should be able to negotiate on their own basis, on their own contract terms. It's not necessarily that there has to be a body that has to look out for your rights, because the umbrella approach is kind of false.
Okay, workers' unions, I think they're really important because they help pass the employees' queries and they get solutions. So without the workers' unions, the employees or the workers cannot get their problems solved easily.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Regional lawmakers are taking steps to try to reduce tribal tension in Lake State after a spate of ethnic and revenge killings. More than a dozen of lawmakers from Warap, Western Bahar al-Ghazal, and Northern Bahar al-Ghazal states launched a peacemaking effort after a three-day meeting in Wau this week. VOA fellow Michael Arthit reports on how the officials are trying to stop the violence before it spreads.
Garang Maywen Maywen is one of the founding members of the Greater Bahar al-Ghazal Peace Initiative for Lake State. He says he and the 14 other lawmakers who set up the initiative are concerned about the rush of tribal revenge killings, many of them for cattle wrestling in Rumbek.
The senseless killing, which is continuing in Lake State, is really disturbing the other sisterly states. We become concerned to make an initiative and try to go to the ground, hold consultative meetings and rallies by asking the local people what is the reason of killing themselves.
One of the tasks regional lawmakers have set themselves is to answer the question, why are the people of Lake State killing each other?
The road users from Juba to Wau, to Awil, to Ruarab, are now become the victims. They are killed innocently This is what we want to go and ask them. What is the reason of killing yourself and killing your brother?
If the dispute is not resolved soon, it could grow into a regional conflict, Mayuen warns. Father John Mathiang is a coordinator for the Roman Catholic Diocese of Rumbek. He says a lack of accountability is one reason why the killing in the area are still continuing.
Neither us or the government is not taking it seriously, not putting people in the cell. People should be arrested, those who commit the crimes. But now the killing become now a daily routine. You hear somebody has been killed. Nobody is running after to chase to know who has caused the problem.
Earlier this week, 12 people were killed in a revenge attack for cattle raid in the Abau area in Lake State. Mathiang says tensions continue to run very high in the area. Local member of the parliament, Veronica Omjuma Philip, says the people of Lake State welcome all outside initiatives to try to restore calm. She says the Lake State government has failed to bring the situation under control.
Laws are there, and there is no implementation. The State Assembly passed so many laws, and instead of respecting those laws to be implemented, so that our community should be controlled and not to allow them to kill themselves. But right now, laws are not working completely in Lake State.
Officials say tribal unrest and other attacks in Lake State have been a growing problem since 2011. One thing the regional lawmakers are looking into is to how to stop cattle rustling, which has been a factor in many of the attacks. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A patient with Ebola-like symptoms has been admitted to a Washington, D.C. area hospital. A spokeswoman, Carrie Ann Hamilton, for Howard University Hospital, today said that a patient who recently traveled to Nigeria was in stable condition. The spokeswoman said medical authorities have isolated the patient and activated the appropriate infection control protocols. Meanwhile, the Dallas County Health Director in Dallas, Texas, says the situation surrounding the first U.S. diagnosis of Ebola virus is, in his words, under control, despite the quarantine of four people and the monitoring of close to 100 others. Pro-democracy student protesters in Hong Kong have called off talks with the government after violent clashes broke out again today with opponents of the demonstrations. The Hong Kong Federation of Students said today it had no choice but to cancel the talks. Previously, demonstrators had threatened to call off the talks if action was not taken to protect the protesters, saying organized attacks on demonstrators must stop. And finally, Australia's Prime Minister announced today that its military will join the coalition effort in battling Islamic State militants in Iraq. Australia is joining the fight against the militant group one day after Turkish lawmakers authorized military force in Syria and Iraq. The law also allows foreign forces to operate from Turkey against the IS. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
President Barack Obama has waived restrictions against providing military aid to six countries, including South Sudan, cited this year for using child soldiers. The countries were among nine listed by the State Department in June report on human trafficking. The waivers shield the countries from being fully subjected to penalties under the Child Soldiers Prevention Act, which requires the U.S. to cut off some forms of military assistance to offending countries. As VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins reports, there is concern that the waivers send out the wrong message.
Child soldiers like these in the Central African Republic often wind up being further victimized after joining a conflict, says American University Youth and Conflict Professor Susan Shepler.
They are often forcefully recruited into armed forces, or sometimes go into armed forces because they have no other choice in terms of their poverty or their family situation. Then once they're participating, they're sometimes called on to commit horrible atrocities.
Concerns about such abuses prompted the U.S. to cite 9 countries for their use of child soldiers. They are the Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, Yemen, and Myanmar. Now the U.S. has given all of these countries except Syria, Myanmar, and Sudan a full or partial waiver from the Child Soldier Prevention Act. State Department Human Rights and Security Advisor Dan Mahanti explains why.
We're looking primarily at progress that may have been made by the country, hopefully along the lines of a national action plan, which we work very closely with the UN to help enforce and implement. Second, we're looking at the relevance of the assistance to national security objectives of the United States.
Mahanti rejects claims that the waivers sent out a mixed message to countries that use child soldiers.
Quite the opposite, actually. I think the time period that we have between when the trafficking in persons report comes out and the countries are actually identified and the point at which the president makes his determination of waivers is actually a really key target of opportunity for us to talk with civil society, to speak with the UN and speak with the countries in question, to make it very clear that it's by no means an automatic decision that the president will waive certain forms of assistance.
Human rights advocate Adote Akwe disagrees.
That is what a recipient government in Africa is going to interpret it as, business as usual. The United States wants to train our security forces. Yes, there's some concerns about child soldiers, but don't worry, it's not that serious. And I think that that's the real danger here.
He says while it can be difficult to implement changes, not doing something to curb the use of child soldiers is worse.
Children being physically abused, children being at risk of death, children not having an education, children being exposed to violence and beginning to be trained as soldiers before they have the mental ability or the moral ability to know when violence is acceptable, if it ever is.
Akwe says one of the best things the U.S. can do to help children like these is to follow through on its policy to hold accountable the countries that use children in conflicts. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
And a new film that touches on Sudan's child soldiers opens in dozens of American theaters across the United States tonight. It's about the so-called Lost Boys of Sudan and follows the traumatic journey of 4 orphan children who narrowly escaped death in their village during the country's civil war in the 1980s. They traveled hundreds of miles on foot to Ethiopia and eventually to Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp, where they lived for years before flying to the United States. VOA fellow Lucy Pony attended a special screening of the film last night in Washington, D.C., and has this report.
This is called ice. This is what winter in America feels like.
Our names are on that list!
Yes, hello, this is Carrie. Pick up who? I'm just supposed to help them find jobs.
The Good Life features Academy Award-winning actress Reese Witherspoon as an employment agent who helps the lost boys find work. South Sudanese actor and model Ger Duan also stars in the film along with South Sudanese rap star Emmanuel Jal, both of whom are former lost boys. Other lost boys spoke to the audience before the film began. One of them is David Dow Achuoth from South Sudan, who said the film brought back chilling memories of his first day in America.
When Lost Boy came to this country, we had people waiting for us at the airport with my name at a white board, and they would say, David Achuoth, and the people that I never met before. That generosity of American people is what we continue to recognize.
Achuoth paid tribute to the American people for embracing him and his friends at a time when they had nothing to their name, trying to survive in UN-run camps.
Whether it could have been you paying your taxes here, and those taxes were used to support the United Nations, and then from the United Nations they were taken to the camp, and then they were used to purchase food ratio that were given to us, you are responsible for me, and I am a testimony of your generosity.
Another lost boy, Moses Stone, told the audience that watching The Good Lie brought back bittersweet memories.
I look at the movie in three contexts. One is the tribute to my brothers and sisters who never made it today, who have not able to survive. That's a tribute to them. The second is to some of my fellows, me included, who have survived the war, And then the third are people like you who have done everything you could to reach out to many, vulnerable refugees, not only South Sudan, but any refugees that you touch, anything that you contribute, wherever you are, it actually gets to the person that really deserves that kind of assistance.
Nancy Gerry was one of the several South Sudanese diaspora who watched the movie last night. Gerry, who heads the South Sudanese community in Washington, said she enjoyed the movie but thought it should have caught up with some of the lost boys today.
I wanted them to more stress out on the successes, the aftermath of what had happened here that I didn't get to see here. We have many of them that are working in the Capitol Hill, the State Department, with the USAID. We have many of them who have nonprofit organizations who are currently helping some of the camps in Uganda, Kenya, and South Sudan.
A young South Sudanese woman in the audience who wished not to be identified says she became quite emotional while watching the film.
Because of the war and everything, it made me emotional. I could relate to them and their feelings and what they went through, because I didn't go through the war part, but then I experienced half of what was shown in the movies.
While the film focuses on the atrocities committed during the Sudan Civil War years ago, deadly violence continues today in South Sudan after the fighting that broke out in December between President Kiir and his former Vice President Riek Machar. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
VOA fellow Nabil Biagio contributed to this report. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Ceasefire by Kebaz featuring Young Bo.
We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep.
Zeta Duban, Junub Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, lakini siyasa shilu nasfa ukate zaman, nina kula na kan mashin leki dam, shuf shabab bimud, iyal bimud bejian, metalga ofof kaman, kuli yo mahal bika, mama bikore,
Rabbi,
we want peace.
Not solved. All I see is children dying. No orphans every day. I see the mothers crying. Lay a jama. Zaman kanja kila na bin belet na biniya. Mia feel mia bada mendin fadia lakin gibu katia. Zaman to will mater go full niya. Stop the eye of peace. Peace and love is what you're looking for. We're dying for equality. Dying for humanity, prosperity and justice. Stop the bloodshed. Give a chance to the little ones to build this young nation. We need motivation, education for the Nasmut Kadir, my bag there, that for Bill. The fish is so bright, I need some sun and shade.
Press and feeble fucks, put your hands together and pray for the sky. Yes. To open the gates and dry your eyes. Watching the SSTV, I see everybody moaning. It ain't no good morning, oh God, it's a bad morning. Oh. Every day is a bad news, like my father just died in the booze. Got confused, my wife lost her perfumes. Jere, cool your best. Jaino, my machines, that beautiful job.
We have been listening to Kebaz with Young Bo and the song Ceasefire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Have a good weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yes, for peace and justice.
We need peace.
Poverty on my chest, the blood sheds. My desire right now is to cease fire. Moving on with my life, my next prayer.